Hello, I'm Dan Masterson, host of Strategy Talk. With me today are Austin Bay and Jim Dunnigan. Austin is an author, columnist, blogger, and contributor to StrategyPage.com. Jim is a military analyst, consultant for the U.S. military, and well-known author. On Strategy Talk, we discuss current events with our own unique twist. We report news as history. Austin and Jim, we've been seeing a lot of stuff happen over at on the Horn of Africa and around the Horn of Africa. It's actually, as we've talked about before in our little podcasts and also on strategypage.com, this is nothing new. This has been going on for hundreds of years, correct?
Well, yes, yes and no. The Somalis have always been troublesome, but the way the politics worked in that part of the world, over 1,000 years ago, the Arabs came across the Gulf of Aden and down the coast, and they basically set up shop in coastal villages. Some of them became forts, because even then, the inland tribes, the present-day Somalis, were a rough bunch. A lot in the north, they were herders, nomads, and these, by definition, are, you know, rough characters because they live a rough life. But the Somalis became basically the bullies of the neighborhood. They raided a lot. They're much like Afghanistan. It's not to say the area was ungovernable. Occasionally, some tribal leader, or they call them clans in the media, would cobble together a kingdom which would last a generation or two, and then bingo, they'd fall apart. So there was no real government until Italy and Britain showed up and colonized the place in the 19th century. But the reason there was no piracy, or very little piracy, was because it was the coastal cities or towns, especially Mogadishu, Kismayo, you know, places that are still there. They basically depended on trade, and they kept peace with the interior tribes by providing them a market for their herds. You know, you want to sell your goats at a good price, you know, don't burn my place down and I'll take care of business. And of course they would bring in trade goods. And of course they kept the surrounding seas largely free of pirates. But of course that disappeared, that sort of understanding disappeared when Somalia went completely, you know, ungovernable. There are no longer coastal cities that depend on anything but aid shipments, you know, free food and medicine and what have you. And of course, the two American ships that were attacked recently were carrying those kind of supplies into Mombasa, where they're then shipped up to Somalia. Some of them go to the 100,000 or so Somali refugees in northern Kenya. So the place is totally out of control, and that's when you get piracy. So basically, because the coastal towns no longer have that control over the interior tribes, the piracy has become prevalent because there's no other business available. I mean, it's a business option that's only available in a area where there is no government. Because where there's no government, you can basically, you know, hijack ships and hold them for ransom. And the seafaring nations of the world believed in, over the last few decades, that that would never happen again. So they changed the rules. Up until fairly recently, the rules were, if you were a pirate, you were killed on sight. And, you know, the maritime nations decided, you know, since World War II, that that was uncivilized. So now they have civilized rules, which basically make it very difficult to go after pirates.
Austin?
Yeah, look, the problem of littoral piracy in littoral areas all around the globe has been a plague ever since people started sending cargo ships about, or even fishing in waters off beyond their own immediate shoreline. They're pirates are crooks. They're thieves. They're sea thieves. And here's how I would evolve some of the things that Jim said. Piracy is a way to make money. It's an option. It could be easier than being a fisherman. It could be easier than being a trader. And, you know, there are governments that have operated piracy as a means of taxation. And you think about the Bay of Algiers, that's B-E-Y, and the Barbary Coast. It was an operation that justified, there was an ideological justification, is that they, Muslim city-states, Muslim potentates, they were going to raid infidel shipping. And there was plenty of infidel shipping along the North African littoral. It was cheaper in some cases to pay these guys off. At some point, though, in the United States, we hit was millions for defense, not 1 cent for tribute, and you move to the long-term naval guerrilla war fought by the United States against the Barbary pirates. That didn't end, by the way, even though there was the United States had some success and the British had some success as well. That really didn't end until the French invaded North Africa in, 1830, I think?
Yeah.
In other words, the French imposed French started turning it into a colony. Now, we know how that ended up because of the Algerian War after World War II. It didn't end well for France.
Now, but it did end the piracy.
Pardon? No, they didn't get back. It ended piracy. Oh, yes,
exactly.
It definitely ended the piracy.
And that's sort of the key for Somalia. The colonial government was in Algeria and Libya, you know, all those North African countries, long enough to, well, I hate to use this phrase, civilize the locals, to teach them that piracy is not good, and maybe we shouldn't do that. And that stuck, but it didn't stick in Somalia.
Well, here, let me make another point, though, about somebody there. The Somali situation has some analogs. If they're not there, some of the analogies get pretty brittle and weak. I'm not going to make a direct analogy to the Barbary Wars. There's the other analogs you find, though, in Southeast Asia, including some of the piratical operations you see in the Sulu Sea, off Borneo, and some that were actually continuing pirate operations in Southeast Asia that really only World War II suppressed because of showing up of the Japanese fleet and the U.S. fleet along in the Southeast Asian Asian coast. Now, what the Somali pirates do is, first of all, Jim's already described the chaos. Everybody's aware of the chaos. Somalia is a truly failed state. The nudge towards nation building that the Clinton administration began in 1993 ended with the pullout after Black Hawk Down, and it's been in seething chaos. The Ethiopian invasion December 2006, early...
Mm-hmm.
And then into January 2007 was a hope that we might provide, there might be the beginning of some central government. Now, stop just for that. Yeah, we're aware that Somalia divides into three parts. You can go and find actually divides into more parts than that, but you go find a on point column I did, I think it was 2002 or 2003, talking about Puntland, which operates as its own little potentate, and Somaliland Republic, which is up on the northern side of Somalia. The Somaliland Republic, I think Ethiopia is the only nation that recognizes it, and so it's essentially in some ways a satrap or a satellite of Ethiopia. Provides ports services for Ethiopia, since Ethiopia is still really at war with Eritrea. Somalia is divided. The pirates of Puntland, this is a way to make money, and their ideological component, I noticed that they have backed off over the last two or three years on the more overt Islamist appeals. Now they say that they're serving as a coast guard. It seems that Al Sharpton has picked up on this. A coast guard off of Puntland is their claim, because all of these foreign fishing operations come in and fish off Somalia, and they don't pay any taxes. So we're a taxing authority. Well, that's good propaganda that plays, I suppose, with certain types, doesn't play very far because these guys are operating well off of the coast, even beyond the 200-mile economic zone, which would, I suppose, if they got technical about it, they could say what they were defending. They also claim that they are stopping. This is the one that's really designed to appeal to a certain kind of news media, that ships drop their sludge and their waste products and their pollutants, and they want to imposing fines for polluting the waters of the Gulf of Aden. Well, those are all pretty transparent media covers for what is a very long-ranging and sophisticated, and I'll even use the term syndicated, because they've got financial contacts and structures, and they allegedly have contacts with various other Somali groups, including Al-Shabaab, which is Islamist affiliate of Al-Qaeda. They are a syndicated, organized money-making operation. As Jim has pointed out in several things he's written about Somalia, what they're doing is right below the tipping point of where the seafaring trading nations, and that's a lot of very powerful nations, India, China, United States, the European states, Japan, are going to decide it's more worthwhile to go after them militarily and criminally prosecute them, destroy them, than it is to put up with the rise in shipping rates and the hassle of paying them off, because military operations are extremely expensive. Right now, these guys are, there was a piece that Jim did a few weeks ago showing that they're just operating below an economic horizon that it might be better to just let them kind of go on doing that as long as they don't kill crews and kill people. Unfortunately, they have done that in some cases.
Right.
And that's where you move it away from, do we go ahead and pay them off and treat it as sort of a toll, or which is a Barbary pirate operation,
right,
to some degree, or do we go after them because now they're murdering
Jim
as well?
They, of course, a thing you have to keep in mind is there's always been, even in the 20th century and today, a form of piracy, which is basically, high seas robbery, where they just come on board and they grab whatever they can carry away and they're gone. You cannot steal the ship, hijack the ship, unless you have a place to park it and safely negotiate for its release. That's what makes Somalia unique. There are always places, and there are indeed today, or Nigeria, Indonesia, Malaysia, places where there is piracy. It's usually local fishermen moonlighting, and they do this at night, and they get away with it, and as long as they don't get caught with the stolen goods. I mean, as Austin was pointing out, they have an infrastructure. There are fences. There are guys they can go to who will pick up, maritime radios and, satellite phones or whatever they can grab off a merchant ship, and give them a reasonable amount of money so they feel it's worth the risk. But what the Somalis are doing is the big league. They're getting the latest one they released, I think it was a Norwegian ship, $2.4 million, divided among a couple of dozen guys. Big Ben gets his kit, his cut. It's taken over 10 years for them to develop the system they have now. It did not happen overnight. I mean, we've been reporting on Somalia, as long as we've been in business, for over 10 years.
Right.
And I think 10 years ago we were reporting on piracy, but it was the old fashion piracy. They weren't grabbing ships, they were grabbing whatever they could get. And then over the years they realized, hey, we have ports that the foreigners won't come into. And they got a hold of, by people in the Persian Gulf, brokers, basically people who were brokering the smuggling of weapons and legitimate goods into Somalia because they still have an economy there. And they said, we could, and one thing led to another. Now, historically, the only way you deal with a situation like this, because this is not a new situation, for thousands of years, pirates have been stealing the ships, usually killing the crews, or in some cases, if it's possible, they take them captive and either sell them in slavery or try and ransom them. But stealing the ship, taking it to a port that where they won't get thrown in jail, and then selling it to whomever. In the last century, you haven't seen any of that because the entire world is basically controlled by major maritime nations that have these big fleets that can go anywhere, do whatever the hell they want. And so that traditional piracy has disappeared until now. The only way you deal with this sort of situation is to go ashore and basically take control of the land, the ports, as it were. Nobody wants to do that because there are new weapons the pirates have, namely the cell phone, camera. You go in there, and the minute you start killing civilians, within minutes, I'm sure some of these Somalis, have a Twitter account where, are going to use Twitter. Within minutes, there will be pictures of dead, Somali women and children, and you know how that works. So that's what we're up against. Now, where it's going to play out, it's very simple. It's the insurance companies. Up until now, the maritime insurance companies, Lloyd's in London is the biggest one, they simply raised the rates for ships going through the Gulf of Aden. The shipping companies, the big ones, they pay double pay or triple pay, whatever it is, for however number of days you're in the Gulf of Aden. They give other bonuses if you're captured. In other words, it's cheaper, as Austin pointed out earlier, to pay off everybody than it is to try and get some military solution, undertaken, because A, no country wants to do it, and B, if they do, the blowback in terms of bad PR is something politicians are more afraid of. In other words, most politicians are more afraid of paper bullets than real ones. And so that's where we stand. Now, the problem is that as more Somalis, and every day more of them are rolling in, and, with their guns and in their pickup trucks and what have you, to get into this, and they're going further afield. I mean, we described this last year, in a 500,000 word article. It's a very simple situation. These guys can steal fishing boats, and they stole two of them last week, and they use them as motherships. They can go, 1,000 kilometers, out to sea. They can go, they're already ranging as far as the Seychelles Islands. They're already going over 1,000 kilometers out there.
Holy
and
cow.
So
one of their raids, I think, was almost out to 1,500, at least in attempt. But
that's right, the Seychelles was 1,500 kilometers away. That was the one. And so they've already made, the Western Indian Ocean a no-go zone. And some shipping companies are telling their ships, look, insurance that, the insurance is one thing, but I just rather not be bothered with having, because it's bad for the shipping companies too. The crews don't like it. The officers don't like it. They don't like being, prisoners of pirates for 3 months, as pleasant as the pirates try to make it for them. And the other problem is, when the pirates come after you, they shoot rockets and bullets at your ship. And so it's a miracle nobody's been hit. I mean, everybody knows this minute you hear that gunfire, you head for that below decks and what have you. But it's only a matter of time before somebody gets hit and hurt. And the shipping companies are basically willing to tolerate this as long as it's tolerable, as long as it's only money they're paying. And even with all the money they're paying now, it only increases their shipping costs, by a fraction of a percent. So that's tolerable. But if it ever reaches a point where it's intolerable, where you have so many pirate groups, you have three or four of them operating now, but if you had dozens, and you had dozens of these ships, wandering around, even if you went after them, I mean, they just pretend they're fishermen, and these guys are playing, they're very clever, and they're playing to, by life and death rules. They know that if they go out there and get ID'd as a mothership, they're going to get shot up by a helicopter. I'm saying if it escalates in weeks or months.
Right.
But if they go out there rigged to be fishing and look like fishermen whenever the UAV or the helicopter comes overboard, chances are the rules of engagement will not allow the helicopter to engage them.
Right.
They have to be caught in the act of actually, taking a ship. And now they're starting to take them at night. They can afford night vision equipment. They can afford all sorts of electronics, which are available to seagoing ships. So this thing can escalate to the point where you have to go ashore. So that's basically what it comes down to. Either it's tolerated for indefinitely? Who knows? But given the amount of money that's being taken and the appeal that has to poverty-stricken Somalis with guns, it's going to keep escalating. And it's going to reach a point where, you know, do we want to get the Indian Ocean back for shipping? Indian Ocean, we're talking about the, what about all those tankers coming out of the Straits of Hormuz? You know, and 20% of the world's shipping traffic goes through the Suez Canal. It's going through the Gulf of Aden. This could get very serious if it escalates. And so eventually the word is going to go out, do we do something? If we do something, it's going to be bloody. Unless, and this is a real long shot, you can negotiate with somebody in Somalia to take care of it. But, you know, they just can't get organized. So right now it's looking like the shores of Tripoli again for the Marines as what? The most likely solution.
There is an option, the sea marshal option, and it's not...
I saw that in the news
solution.
Yesterday.
I mean, it's something I wrote about, too, in this week's
right,
newspaper column. And, but that is putting, a squad, 8 to 10 armed, trained security professionals on freighters, cargo ships, as they make the run from, say, the middle of the Indian Ocean. Actually, it's actually a big effort here, too.
Yeah, but you're looking at about 50,000 ship movements a year if you're taking into account not just the Gulf of Aden, but also the Western Indian Ocean.
You're looking at a huge number, and this is for, what's a good colloquial way to put it? This is for the big boys, really, in the merchant marine business, because they're the only ones who could afford. I'm talking about this as a strictly a civilian security type operation. Who could afford to pay for that quality of security for the 3 or 4 days it takes to get back up and get into the Red Sea, and then you'd notionally take that security team and put it on another ship that's coming down. There's actually a deterrence factor and a lot of utility for it, but it's for the big shippers. I mean, I'll even get into some nitty gritty details here. I was asked about this earlier this week. I said, what would you arm these guys with? And I said, semi-automatic 7.62mm, 30 caliber rifles, M14 type, because those have range and punch, and it's for professionals up on the deck or on the.
That would take a force of about.
That's like terrible.
For the Gulf of Aden, it would take a force of about 5,000, you know, shooters.
Oh, absolutely.
And another 1,000 or so sailors, you know, running the boats, the tenders to pick them up and what have you. Now, this is eminently doable, but you got to think like a pirate. What's the pirate going to do? He says, I've got a base, I've got ocean-going ships, I'm going to go farther out.
Well, no, it's a huge sea area, but here's the huge sea area that you'd have to do this with. The thing is, though, all of the smaller Yemeni and
uninsured
coastal vessels wouldn't be part of a sea marshal mitigation, because it's not a solution. It only
well, you have to be able to afford it.
Exactly. That's what I said. This is for the big boys. Now, the deal is, this is what gets back to this punitive operation that Jim's talking about. What keeps people from doing that? Well, one thing is, as Jim's talked about, propaganda value is, but you're also putting your own soldiers at risk, your sailors, your Marines, and the like. There's a potential here for a very...
Well, not so much. You can basically go gunboat diplomacy with smart bombs. You know, you could send, you know, a dozen aircraft, you know, carrying, you know, 500-pound, you know, JDAMs.
What's the video tape you see the next day after that, Jim? What's the videotape?
Pardon?
I'm not the one who's afraid of the videotape, but what's the videotape we get after the smart bombs take?
Oh, well, no matter what you do, you're going to have, you know, the videos. Yeah. YouTube's going to be full of dead Somali women and children.
Exactly. Yeah, there it is.
The trouble is, there's no way to avoid that, because the Somalis consider warfare a family affair. They showed that in 93, where they would get the women and kids, you know, to provide cover. And the women and kids, while they weren't a lot enthusiastic, they didn't run away.
Right.
They killed 24 Pakistani peacekeepers using that technique. And the Pakistanis said, the hell with this. You know, we're gone, baby. This is not what we fight.
Well, that's what we, and our comeback is we'll take care of it. And that leads to Black Hawk Down, which is, it says if you're not going to kill.
Well, but the problem is we won Black Hawk Down. You know, we killed 500 Somalis, including a lot of, you know, women and children. But we lost we lost 18 Americans, and that's considered a defeat by, you know, information war standards.
And then after that, Al-Qaeda says, see, America runs, you know. So we've lived with the Black Hawk Down situation as a... that plays into 9/11 in an odd way.
Now, it seems like...
Read what Al-Qaeda writes, and Al-Qaeda points to that.
Right. Now, it seems like the one nation that may have the cojones to do something drastic about this is China.
Now, why do you say that, Dan? I'm gonna
Well, because they've started putting escorts with their ships, right? They don't have to worry about the international press. If some of their ships start getting captured, I think they go in and make a strike.
Dan has got a point there, because the Chinese have a certain rapport with the Africans. They're the new kids on the block. And, for example, the head of the Transitional National Government in Somalia, which is a Islamist, you know, these days, a more moderate Islamist, they have praised the attacks against the pirates, because they see the pirates as bad for Somalia, which in a way it is. So if the Chinese went in, and they've already sent special operations people with the ships they have sent over there, so they have special operations capability. But, you know, if they sent, you know, one of the landing craft, who've been training to invade Taiwan for the last 50 years, they sent them over there and went ashore and basically, you know, did what they know how to do. Yes, there'd be bad publicity, but as Austin points out, Chinese don't give a crap. As long as they're popular in Africa, that's all that counts.
Well, now, Dan's the one who said they don't give a crap on this. This is a scenario that you guys are beginning to make a case for. I don't see China doing it politically unless China, in some ways, can fade the heat and guess who they will trust to help fade the heat.
Okay. Yeah, well, see, there's another reason the Chinese won't do it. The Chinese crews, like American crews, they fight back. In fact, a bunch of Chinese who literally fought a battle, you know, repelling pirates, they all got $10,000 rewards in medals when they got back to China, one merchant ship. We wrote about that. So the Chinese expect Chinese crewed ships to fight back.
Which is
whether you got weapons or not.
The U.S. expects as well, and it's some sort of resistance, and we demonstrated that last week. So
yeah, but see, this we're talking about, you know, the lottery here for these Somalis, $2 million. You know, I mean, each guy going aboard, you know, clears several hundred thousand dollars, which will set you up for life in a place like Somalia. You know, the satellite photos are showing all sorts of new construction in those towns up north. Because these are basically local fishermen and what have you. These guys are living large.
It's the Somali.
Every one of them that's fooling around in an SUV and building a new house and has three wives now. That's tremendous encouragement.
Jim, for
new kids to get out there and do it.
Jim, it reminds me, this is the Somali version of spam. Running a spam operation. You know,
like a Nigerian spam operation?
Yeah.
Okay.
But anyway, yeah, the question is, when is the pirate bubble going to burst? To me, it almost seems like it's going to continue going on, I think, until some of the sailors start getting killed. I think that the
Somalis have been very careful to avoid that. But, you know, you're right. Since they fire on the ships every time they come after them, it's only a matter of time. But I suspect in the grand scheme of things, unless there are a lot of deaths, see, the Somalis understand this. They know this whole information war media game plays out. As long as there are not a lot of dead sailors, as long as it's tolerable, as long as the insurance companies and the shipping companies are willing to pay off, they're going to let it keep on going. Unless it interferes with trade, which it's not doing, because there are 400, you know, they only grab only a few ships out of every 1,000.
Right.
That are going through those waters. And the only thing that could make this a problem is if you got so many pirates rolling around that it literally, you know, began to have an appreciable impact on trade, but that would have to be a huge number. And I don't know if I imagine there's some Somalis who are doing the math. Okay, I have access to the internet. You know, you basically get a share of the one of those ship ransoms. You can afford to buy satellite access to the internet. So you know, you can do the numbers, and a lot of guys can get rich. And I think that's what's going to make it a real rodeo. But what's going to happen is a lot of the seafaring countries, there's going to be a public outcry. As you pointed out, what happened in the United States 200 years ago? Why should we be paying tribute to these goddamn pirates?
Right.
But well, what they don't realize is it's not enough to send in the Marines. You got to basically go in and colonize the place.
Austin?
Let's point out, though, that some of the way, these guys have been moving upscale over the last few years. They've preyed on Yemeni fishermen. I recall something. I want to say that if we didn't report on this, this is something we talked about, a raid among ourselves 6 or 7 years ago where the Somali pirates seized a bunch of Yemeni fishing craft. I know that this has happened again further north up the channel. I don't know that it's the same the same group that's going out after the big ships, but these are their these are their traditional victims. And those folks have been held. There are instances, you know, there was a Frenchman killed in an attempt by the French last week, and they were successful. You judge for yourself. The French commandos took the yacht, but the yacht owner was killed in the process. There have been deaths. There have been people hurt. There have been people suffering. The pirates are clever gangsters, but they're still gangsters, and they use terror as a tactic, as a criminal tactic. It's a business tactic. At some point, the pressure, and this is, I suppose this is the way I'd conclude what our discussion here. This is reinforcing something Jim said a minute ago. At some point, the pressure is going to build. These guys are going to make a mistake, and even if they try to pull back, there's going to be an international pressure to take some action onshore against them. And I don't know when that's going to be, but that's the way this looks like it's going right now.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a while yet because I don't see
it's
any
going to be later rather than sooner.
Yeah, because there just isn't the will in the European community and the in North America at this point.
I will be watching for your China scenario, though, Dan.
Okay.
I'll be watching for that.
Okay? All right.
Jim and I will be discussing the indicators because I see the Chinese as like, boy, they want to blame it on Uncle Sam. Okay.
Yep.
It's not that they wouldn't act, but you see, they got to have Big Sam giving them cover so they can say they're non-aligned or whatever.
Right. All right, gentlemen. We'll talk to you next time.
Okay.
Thanks, man. Bye.